So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us this evening. So the subject is memories, recollections, insights of Brahma Baba and the changeover period, which is really interesting subject. So before I ask you a few questions about that, how old were you when you first met Brahma Baba?
I was 8.
And in 1969 you were how old?
I was 19.
Okay, so I didn't want to give away your age.
No, that's okay. It's not a problem that I have, so that's okay.
So you had quite a reasonable period of time of getting to know him. Is there a way of estimating how many times you would have met him during that time?
I count. it was 1957, then 66, 67, 68, in May, no, June, and then again in October, and then again in December. That's it, 6 times.
Okay.
And then 69, when I came for the funeral, he was gone.
And so those 6 times, what was your level of engagement with him? How much time did you get with him?
A lot, because there were just a handful of us. We'd go, 57 was very brief. And that was just a very short meeting because it was in Delhi and I was little. But so it was just a short meeting and we then went back home. But 66, 67 was very intense because I think there were maybe about 6 of us who had come from Pune and about 30 Madhubanavasis and monsoon seasons. And so we had a lot of time with Baba, not just morning and evening, but Baba would go for a walk in the garden, would call us, Baba would meet us in the evening because it wasn't official classes going on in Madhuban. So it was a fair amount of time. Baba calling us to have a meal with him at one point. Then another time Baba said, let's have a picnic. And I thought we'd go out somewhere. But instead we went up onto the terrace and had a picnic on the roof there. So.
And the conversations that you had with Brahma Baba, at what point would you say you felt, wow, this really is someone really special?
The specialness of Brahma Baba was always visible. But the time that I really recognized him was 1968 when I met him, and it was with Gyan, with understanding. And so it was also the last time that Dadi Janki was meeting him. So I look back on that time as being a very poignant time, because it was a time that maybe some of you remember, but remember in terms of stories, or maybe past birth even, I don't know. But it was a time when Baba was conducting Amrit Vela. Baba would be up and conducting, and I had just come into Gyan about a month earlier. So through May, Baba was conducting yoga, and Dadi Janki would share her experience of being with Baba in Amrit Vela when she was sitting in Pune. And Dadi's practice of giving classes has been since the 50s. And so I was fascinated because when I started class in the morning, it was just a few days after starting the course, because Dadi said, oh, you've gone to Madhuban enough times, heard Murali, so come anyway. So I'd go morning and then later on for the course. And Dadi would share before Murali her experience of Amrit Vela or her churning or whatever, and then we'd hear Murali. And I began to notice, because the written Muralis would come like 10 days afterwards. Baba would speak, somebody would write, it would then be typed and cyclostyled and a whole process. And so I began to see how the things that Dadi had been saying were very much the things that were coming up in the Murli of that date. So it was like she had a special insight, a connection with Baba that was quite powerful.
Was Brahma Baba listening in on those experiences from Dadi?
No. I would be hearing Dadi
give. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. So in the morning she would take class.
Got it.
Her experience of Amritvela, and then some days later we would read the Murli.
I see, right, okay.
And we'd compare the date.
Okay, right.
And it was clear that she had this link in which she was picking up things. And then we went to Abu in June, and we were met downstairs at the station by somebody called Bhuri Dadi. Some of you remember her. She was very fair. And she had, she always wore the Punjabi dress. She didn't wear sari. And she was one who'd go up and down the mountain sometimes a few times a day to receive guests and so on. So Bhuri Dadi met us downstairs. And first thing she says to Dadi Janki is that Baba didn't conduct Amritvela today. And Dadi's shocked. What happened? Is Baba not well? And she says, no, Baba's okay, but Baba didn't conduct, and she obviously didn't know anymore. And so we come upstairs, and normally you would go bathe and get fresh and then go to see Baba. But Dadi was so concerned that she immediately went to Baba's room, and we trotted along with her. And she goes to see Baba, and Baba's there, and Baba welcomes her, Drishti. And then she says to Baba, the first thing she says to Baba, Baba, I hear you've stopped conducting Amritvela. And Baba says, but you were here. And she says, yes, I was here. And that was the last. She has often talked about her experiences of that June meeting with Baba, different situations and things. So that was a time when the doctor had said to Baba, either you conduct Amritvela or you conduct the Murli. And so then Baba had chosen to conduct the Murli. The body, 93, just couldn't take the strain of everything. Because then after that, Baba would just carry on with other things and office work and so on and so on. So the whole day would go right the way through till 3 o'clock. And so Baba's rest time was usually after 3 in the afternoon. So that was the most powerful time that I recall when I knew who is Baba.
And you mentioned that those final meetings that you had with him were really special and had a big impact. What was it about them that really touched you?
That Baba knew me. Baba knew me better than I knew myself. It was the time that I had written to Baba saying I want to surrender, and Baba sent a telegram in return saying, come and see me. Dadi Janak is coming, come with her. And so that was just a couple of weeks later. And so that first meeting at that moment is as I've described. Then in the evening we again went to see Baba, and what Baba said then was, tomorrow morning, come and see me in the hut at 10:30. And so morning class, night class, morning class, and then in the hut. And the hut was a bit different. The location was different. And it used to be created fresh every year at that time.
Okay.
Banana leaves. It wasn't the bamboo structure that you see today. Just a concrete base, but banana leaves that made the hut. And so, and Baba sitting, as always, just on the floor, semi-lotus. And that meeting, it's like Baba's giving me instructions for my life. And Baba knows. And it was at that time, Baba saying to me, child, what do you want to tell me? And I say, Baba, I want to surrender. And Baba looks at me and says, Baba knew it already. And that's when I recalled that 3 years earlier, when I'd come at that time, Baba had said that I would become a teacher and so on and so on. And at that time, I could scarcely understand Hindi, so it sort of went above my head. But it was at this time that then, as Baba spoke, that scene came back to mind. And so I understood that Baba's not just this ordinary person, but Baba really is. You know, Baba's been using this term, Trikal Darshi, the one who sees the three aspects of time. And so just like with Avyakt Baba, when you meet Avyakt Baba, especially when we used to have our personal meetings with Avyakt Baba, absolutely you got the feeling that Baba knew you. You must have had many personal meetings.
No, a few, not many.
So it's that same feeling that Baba knows me really, really.
So he said, okay, he knew already that you wanted to surrender. What else did he tell you?
He said that Baba wants you to do service, and Baba will send you with Didi on tour, and you can see where it is you want to settle. And so Baba gave all that information. And then Baba said, but Baba wants you to get a letter from your father. And I said, he's never going to give me a letter. And I thought to myself, well, I'm 19, and so why do I need a letter? But I didn't voice that to Baba. I don't think I could have said that to him. But it crossed my mind at that time. But Baba said, no, you have to get a letter. And I said, Baba, he won't give me a letter. And Baba said, Baba knows him. He will. And so I wrote a letter, no emails or faxes in those days. So I wrote a letter to him saying, this is what I'd like to do. And do I have your permission? I put it in that way. And he wrote back sort of giving me a wide range of options. You could go here, you could go here, you could go here. And he didn't actually say, yes, you can do this. So I wrote back and said, well, thank you for giving me all these choices. And I'm glad that you're happy with whatever is my choice and my choices. So it wasn't a straight yes, but it wasn't a no. So I took advantage of that.
Right.
And that was fine. It was okay.
And then after that sort of final time that you met him face to face, and before the time in 1969,
no, that wasn't the final.
Oh, that wasn't
time.
The final.
No. Because I met him in June, and that's the exchange. And then I had to go back to Pune and settle various things and do all this letter stuff. And then I came back in October. Daddy Janki was supposed to come with us, but she couldn't come because she was not well. So I've seen Daddy not well since the 60s. So she couldn't come. And then Baba sent a telegram. Baba didn't hang around waiting for letters, you know, quick. And in the telegram it was that Janak shouldn't travel. People had told Baba about her health. But Rajni and Janati can come on their own anyway. Because this discipline of having teacher accompany you was very specific at that time. Now, people know the system of Madhuban, now you've got classes going on all day, so it's fine, it's very different. But at that time you didn't have classes going on. You had Murli and Murli, and in between the teacher had to organize whatever she wanted to organize. So, and it was, and certainly for us, monsoon time, it was mostly with Baba. But Baba gave that permission, so then we go to Abu. And then Baba sends me off to Agra. Well, it is a tour, and then finally landing up in Agra. And then December, I go with, it was a very large group that went from Agra. So it was actually Mahendra Bhai, the one who passed away, Vimla Ben, she passed away last year, the two of them, and myself, and another teacher, because it's a big group. So the four of us go with this group to Madhuban, and it's the first time Baba seeing me as a BK in a sari and so on. And that's when Baba was really just very, very pleased and happy about it.
So that's December 68.
Yeah, so just about a month before Baba passed away.
So from the your time of seeing him over the years, how did you notice him changing? What was your, were the different experiences you were getting of him over that time? What was he like at the end compared to when you first met him?
More, I think it was that I was changing.
Right.
Because 66, it was my first conscious meeting as a child. How much did I know? But at that time, yes, it was a very conscious meeting with him. And 67, it wasn't new. I'd met him a year earlier, so I more or less knew what to expect, so I was a lot more comfortable with him. And then 68, it went recognizing Baba as the Supreme Teacher. And then in October, it was to go take instructions from Baba. So my perception of Baba was changing all the time. And I know others have said how they would notice that Baba would give attention to detail, and then later Baba wasn't giving that same sort of attention, and they would see Baba in his very subtle form. And that sort of escaped me in a sense, because Baba was still giving a lot of very personal, detailed attention to everything about my life. Like, for example, Baba even said to me in October, because I thought that now I'd left Pune, I was now going to Agra, and my connection was going to be with Didi. That was how I'd been thinking, and I didn't say anything. I didn't think I needed to. But Baba at that time categorically said to me, make sure that you write a letter to Dadi Janki to tell her how you're getting on at least once a month. And so now it's a very, very specific instruction. So I was seeing Baba get into detail with me even at that time. And yes, it wasn't that I was going to sit with Baba for half an hour and chew his ear about this thing and that thing or whatever. But Baba's attention to detail was incredible through every single time I did meet him. Like in 66 when we met Baba, Baba asked us, children, what do you eat? And we said, whatever. And he said, why Baba's asking is because maybe you're not used to eating chapatis. Maybe you want to have bread. Baba can get bread from the bakery in the village. And he said, no, Baba, we're used to eating chapatis. And then he said, what about biscuits? Do you want biscuits? Baba can get them from the shops. I think Baba was playing the mother role. And then that night, in the night class, night class is always informal and very chatty, interaction with Baba. So we were sitting there in front. My brother's younger than me, so he was very little. And Baba said to us at the end of the murli, did you bring your towels? Did you bring your toothpaste? Baba can provide it. So, detail.
Yeah.
Absolutely that concern of making sure that you're comfortable and everything is okay and everything is as it should be. The other day in the murli, Baba used this term dhupvas, and I don't know how Jasu translated it in the murli, which was, I didn't read the English murli that day, I was reading Hindi murli, vas dhup. Incense. It's a specific type of incense in the thing that you have this metallic container and you put something hot, whether it's coal or wooden embers or whatever, and you sprinkle this powder, and then the smoke that comes from it, from that, is very strong incense, whatever it is. So it's that type of thing, and it has a long metal rod, at least this one did. And so Baba using that term in the murli reminded me of the scene And so this would have been in 68, because it was the only time we were there in the summer when it was really hot. And so at night, Baba said to me, come with me. And Baba walked, and I walked along, and he went to by the history hall. There were the rooms there, and one of the sisters had this contraption and she was sprinkling this, and she was taking it to every room, and the purpose of this was to chase away the insects, the mosquitoes and whatever, because if you carry the smoke into a room, and the rooms are not so big, the original ones, all the bugs go away, and it leaves a very sweet fragrance in the room, so people can sleep well. So Baba himself went to every single room with the sister, getting every room filled with this incense and this smoke. So just think about it again, the sort of sustenance that Baba gave, the love with which Baba at night himself would go to every single room and do this. So really quite incredible in terms of the attention that Baba would give.
Now when 18th January happened in 69, a lot of the experiences we hear talk about just the shock and real surprise that Baba had become a Viet. Had you never had the thought, or you'd never heard anyone talk about what will happen when Baba goes? Surely it must have come up in conversation.
No way. We all thought that when Baba goes, we fly off with him. We never, ever, ever thought that there'd be a yakya that would continue after him. It just wasn't. And yet, of course, the Sakar Murlis talk about the corporeal becoming the angel. And of course, today when you read those Murlis, you pick that up. Mm. And I hadn't heard those Murlis anyway. But even if I had, and those who had heard them didn't pick it up. So we thought that yes, when Baba becomes the Avyat angel, everybody else will also become the same. So there was never any discussion about succession stories.
And Baba had never given any sort of indication about what will happen next.
Well, you read all the Murlis now, and you've read every Murli now 8 times over.
But I mean, not in terms of Murlis, but just in personal conversations that you'd heard.
It never ever happened.
Okay.
The fact that Mama left, that was a surprise, but Baba was the stable pillar, the rock, and how could anything else happen? Of course Baba was going to be with us till the very end. And it just never crossed anybody's intellect that here's a person who's 93 years old, and they're not immortal, but, I mean, like Daddy Janki, you know, I kept thinking in the 60s, when she was in her 60s, 70s, that how much longer, and she's got this mantra of, you know, live every day as if it's your last, and she very often would say, yes, I want to do this today, who has seen what tomorrow brings, and she carried on with that mantra. So at that time, definitely, nobody ever imagined that news could ever happen, that Baba was going.
And when did you get back to Madhuban after Baba became Avyat? Was it the next day, or was it a while after that?
It was Saturday night that Baba left. We got the news probably a few hours later than the Dadis would have got it. I know that Dadi Gulzar got the news literally minutes after Baba's departure. Dadi Janki got the news maybe 15 minutes after, and we got the news a few hours later in Agra, and that was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and Mehndrabai alerted everyone, and we came and sat in yoga, and he was trying to call different places, the places where the Dadis were. So Delhi, nobody was answering, no mobiles, so if the landline, nobody answered, that's it. And Kanpur, we had a few Dadis there, Gangai Dadi and so on. Nobody was answering. And he couldn't believe the news. He thought that somebody was playing a nasty trick and giving us news that wasn't correct, it wasn't correct information. And all the way through till the morning, there was still no news. We just came and sat in yoga. And then the students were arriving in the morning, so that happened. Mahendra Bhai told them, and again, more yoga. Then suddenly at 8 o'clock, Jyoti was with me in Agra. And so suddenly Mahendra Bhai calls us and says, we're going to Abu, would you like to come too? So by then it was the 19th, so we started the journey on the 19th and arrived on the Monday morning, early morning.
The 20th. Okay.
And so it was completely silent, as if nobody was there. Literally, it felt as if nobody was there. And of course, then we were told everybody's in the history hall in meditation. So again, straight from the journey, we go to the history hall, and Baba's there, and Baba looks just very beautiful, just as if Baba's resting. Very beautiful face. It's interesting, I've seen many bodies without souls after that, but you always see a certain trace of decay. But the power of purity of Baba's body was such that by the 20th morning there was no decay, 21st there was still no decay. And so I see that as an indication of how powerfully the body had been cleansed just with the power of purity.
So those one or two days, what was going on with you? How were you feeling? What was going on inside your mind?
A lot of yoga. I couldn't, prior to that, my yoga always was, even when I wasn't in Madhuban or anywhere, but wherever I was, Baba's face would come in front of me and my eyes would focus on Baba's forehead. And so it was literally through Brahma Baba that I'd start having yoga, because that was my experience of Baba giving me drishti and pulling me to God. So if you ask me what's the method of yoga, that's what I tell you. You remember Baba's face. And that night, I couldn't remember Baba's face. And I realized that I had to not remember Baba's face and just focus on Shiv Baba. And so I think I was probably not as emotionally involved as the others who had known Baba, and especially the Dadis who had known Baba and lived with Baba all those years. So I didn't feel that sense of bereavement that I think they must have felt. And so it was easier for me than for the others, I think. And I was, as we were coming on the train to Abu, I was hearing a few sounds that I didn't like, and I shut them out and I just sat quietly.
Because, sounds meaning people talking?
And so what they were saying was, there was one sound saying that, and it was two sisters talking together, because like the whole carriage was BKs, it was nobody else. You know, in the middle of winter, why should people go to a hill resort? You know, the train was empty, just us. And so very soft whispers, but one of them was saying, maybe this is my last journey to Abu. Maybe I'm not ever going to go to Abu again. We used to go to meet Baba, but now what will we go for? And somebody else was saying, but the Murli is our lifeline. How are we going to get our Murlis now? How are we going to manage without Murlis? So there were all these questions, but I wasn't alert enough or aware enough to even have those questions. So I was protected in a sense.
Yeah.
So then when we get to Abu, everything's so quiet. And then we're told, you can rest if you want, you can have yoga if you want, but there's non-stop yoga going on. And what was available was tea and water and milk, and there was no cooking going to happen or anything. So the training section was still under construction. the top floor hadn't been built, just the bottom floor, but 700 people arriving and no accommodation. And so somehow it was, even though the top bit hadn't been completed, we were already occupying the ground floor. And so I think about six of us in one room, things like this, so everybody just managing. But we were very little in our rooms, we were mostly in the hall, really just yoga and yoga. And I think my head just wasn't working. I can't think that of anything I was thinking at that time. It was just yoga. Mm. And then the next morning, Daddy Kumarka announced that the message has come, that today, and just for a moment, her voice broke. She'd been completely stable all the way through. But at that moment, her voice broke, just as she was about to say, today, what was going to happen? And immediately, there's like this wave of sorrow that goes around the hall. And she must have picked it up because she instantly then controlled herself. And again, very calmly carried on. But these are the arrangements for the funeral and everything. And when Baba was gone and she realized, she instantly called Daddy Gulzar. And there's a train that goes at 11 o'clock at night. I don't know now, but at that time. So Daddy Gulzar instantly came. So she arrived next morning and Daddy Kumarka said to her, go to Baba, ask him, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. He didn't tell us this was going to happen. So Daddy Gulzar just kept going up and down. She'd have one question, she'd bring back the answer, another question. So literally everything was happening according to those instructions.
And do you know much about what those up and down questions were? What was the questions coming?
Daddy Kumarka has told us, Daddy Gulzar has told us. So the first question was, where should we have the cremation? And the answer came, on sacred ground, not anywhere else. And then I don't know how they decided that particular spot, but I suppose it was the only spot that was really open, if you think about Pantapavan. So that was the logical spot, but I don't know about that, but just that it had to be on sacred ground. And then the next question was, when do we have the cremation? And the answer, wait, just have tapasya. Many children are arriving, so wait, Baba will tell you when. And of course, in between all of that, since Didi had left on tour in October and I'd gone with her, she hadn't come back yet. I had come back in December, but she was still going further and further and further. And so from Calcutta, they'd gone somewhere else, and so everywhere they were phoning, Didi and Daddy Nirmal Shanta have just gone, just gone, just gone. And so they didn't catch them till Monday. And then by the time they told them, and they were far, there was some Kumbh Mela or something. And so they only actually arrived at 12 o'clock, just about the time on the Tuesday, the 21st, just about the time that they were going to put the body onto the truck, because the instruction had come, have Baba be placed on the truck so that then there's a procession that goes around Abu village, so that nobody says, I wasn't given a chance to see. And so literally, where the body had been decorated with flowers, it's moved from there and they're just about to take the body onto the truck, and Daddy Nirmal Shanta and Didi arrive. So the timing was, you know, Baba saying, this is the day. And then, by then, 700 had come. So those were some of the questions that were happening. I even heard that who are the people who have to prepare the body? Baba gave the names of those Kumaris. And I know that Prem Ben was one of them. Dehradun, Prem Ben, Haridwar. So her name was on that list. And I don't remember the others, but because I knew her, the others I didn't probably know, so the names wouldn't have meant much. But her name was on that list of preparing the body. And then further, who should light the fire? And that was totally revolutionary, having Baba's Lokik son has arrived by then. Jagdish Bhai, as the senior son of the organization, because if it had been earlier, a year earlier, Dada Vishwakishore was there and he was the most senior, but he was gone by then. And so it would have been Jagdish Bhai. But the message came, Kumarka. And so she, in a sense, was already known as the heir. And you know, within the Sindhi community, for example, women don't even go to a cremation. They just don't go. I've heard that in some other communities they do, but they don't in this. But not only were we there, but it happened with Daddy Kumarka lighting the fire. And now I heard that Daddy Janki lit the fire for Ramesh Bhai. And so the son. And I said, answer, that's very surprising. And she said, no, he was her son.
Now, all those questions, to me, they sound incredibly practical. But was not one of those questions to Baba, what is going on?
No. It wasn't. It might have been things going on in people's head. But Daddy Kumarka talking to Daddy Gulzar, it was only practical things. What next? What next? What next? What next?
Right.
And then when the Bhog was being offered, some of you know the story, but it's again really touching. And I didn't hear the story for many, many years later. In fact, in the days of maybe 8-9 years ago in Gyansruwer, whenever Daddy Gulzar and Daddy Janki were there, they'd go across to Gyansruwer, the dining room, because they both loved the view. And they would have their meal together there, overlooking the hills and everything. And their time for meals was always around 2:30, not earlier. And that day, Daddy Janki said she didn't want to come for lunch, she wasn't well. And so could Daddy Gulzar anyway go for lunch and not wait for her? So it's Daddy Gulzar, it's Neelu, it's me and Hansa, and I don't remember who else. And Neelu asks Daddy Gulzar the question, but Daddy, how come you were the one who took Bhog to Baba that day? Because there were other trans messengers who were older than you in Gyan, in age. They all came together. And Daddy Gulzar smiled and she said, yes, they were there. And Neelu could sense that there's a story here. So she prodded a bit more. But why didn't they offer Bhog then? And then that, obviously that he was thinking, shall I tell them, shall I not tell them? And then she told us, and she said that, well, Daddy Pushpashanta was too emotional, and Daddy Kumarka asked her first, and she said, Daddy, I can't. And then Daddy asked Daddy Santri, and she also felt she couldn't. And then Daddy asked me and said, Gula, she always called Gulzar Daddy, Gula. Gula, you're not going to let me down, are you? And she said, how could I say no then? And so it was by default. And so she's then sat to offer Bhog. And she shared this once in Oxford when we were cross-examining her. When, you know, we used to have the family gatherings in the marquee. So we'd asked her to share her experience of that. And she said that, I sat to offer Bhog and went to Baba and I said to Baba, Baba, people have many, many questions in their minds. you're going to have to give me some answers to take back to them. And she says, then, I don't know what happened, Baba disappeared, and then in what appeared to me like a few minutes, then Baba appeared, and I said to Baba, Baba, you haven't given me the answers. And Baba said, child, I went down and I met everyone and I've given them all the answers. And she said, I was very surprised. But I came down and then I'm seeing everybody look at me in a very strange way. And I didn't know what had happened. And then they're telling me, Baba had come, Baba had come. And then she read everything later. So she didn't know that this was going to happen.
And that was on the 21st as well?
21st.
So that was in the evening?
Yeah. Because by the time we had the procession and came back, it was two hours later, about 2 o'clock. Then the fire started and everybody put in sandalwood sticks and then everybody went to showers. So by the time we gathered again, and meanwhile, while all that was going on, the history hall had been washed, the kitchen and everything also. And then at that time, when we gathered together in the hall at six o'clock, something like that, bhog was offered. So by then, by the time everything finished, was Baba was with us for at least a couple of hours, maybe even 3 hours. And so it was a long, long drishti. Can you imagine Baba giving drishti to 700 people and everybody literally electrified and really feeling Baba touch them with that drishti? And then the whisper began and Baba told us that it's Shiv Baba who's come. Today I didn't bring Brahma Baba with me, only Shiv Baba has come.
So when Daddy had sat to bring a book message, no one was expecting Baba to come.
No, we thought that she'd come back from trance and she'd share her book message. I went to the subtle region, but that didn't happen.
So at what point did you realise something different is happening now?
When the drishti started, and like in the history hall, we were all very squashed. So the bhog table is here, the gadi is here, the bhog table, and the dadis, and the kumaris were just behind the dadis. So it was very close. And when the drishti began, instantly you could feel that it was something different. But I couldn't dare imagine that it was Baba. But as the drishti continued, and the silence became more and more intense and powerful, you knew it wasn't Dadi Gulzar. And then we weren't surprised when we started to hear the voice. And Chandras Dada scrambled around trying to put up the amplifier from the tape recorder, and it worked for some people but not for many, but everybody was just silent. You couldn't hear if you were there, but everybody was still just silent, just soaking in the power, the atmosphere.
And were you close enough to be able to hear, Baba?
Yeah.
So
because there was some amplification, the little thing. And so, as I say, closer than else.
Right. And so when he started talking in what may have appeared quite a strange voice, again, what was going through your mind? Any questions as to why is this coming out as a strange whisper? Or was it just you were lost in that experience at that moment?
I don't remember having any question about the whisper, but the first statement that Baba made, I thought, I mean, today you look back and analyze it, and at that time you're not analyzing. But it was brilliant, because what Baba said, you're the children of the ocean of peace, but now I find that you're all in an ocean of upheaval. And everybody just cracked up. Baba knew how to let the tension out instantly. Baba just made us all laugh. And then Baba continued. And because I'd heard those questions on the train, which I hadn't even thought about, Baba was answering everything, everything, everything. It was literally the commander rallying the troops together and telling them, get on with it, what are you doing? And afterwards I even heard, and I hadn't known at that time, but afterwards I heard that there were some dadis who were saying that, well, Baba's now gone, and so it's a signal for us just to sit here in Madhuban and do tapasya, so that we can quickly become avyakt and go back. But that's not what Baba told us. What Baba was telling us at that time in that Murli was, your questions are now answered. Now you go back to your centers, because your students don't know all this. So you go back to your centers and tell them all of this so that they understand. So Baba was, again, very practical. But Baba gave us the spiritual dose. Baba reminded us that early days, Baba used to tell you, even if this one goes away, but you thought it meant that maybe can Brahma Baba ever have doubts and go away? But Baba wasn't talking about having doubts and going away, but there would be a change in the scene. And so you didn't understand, but this is why Baba was telling you, will you still have faith? And of course, it's never been the Brahma Yajna, it's always been the Rudra Gyan Yajna. And so this word Yajna, you know, it keeps coming up. And so when Dadi Prakash Muni was unwell, then again Baba said, it's Shiv Baba's Yajna, the Yajna will continue. Then in November 2015, when Dadi Gulzar, Baba didn't come, and Dadi Gulzar sitting quietly in Ahmedabad, and then suddenly there's this 3-minute message that we get, little paragraph, that it's Shiv Baba in charge, it's not this child Gulzar, what could she do? You know, that little message. So again, the Yajna. And so again today it's something I remind myself of, that the Yajna is going to continue till the end. It's Shiv Baba's Yajna. And so whatever happens, Shiv Baba is in charge. I remind myself of that.
I was going to ask you this later, but as you mentioned it now, where do you see the parallels between the sort of the changeover that happened in 69 and where we are in the Yajna now? You know, people like Ramesh Pai, lots of other seniors have left the body. You're in a very different situation compared to 69, when you were a 19-year-old girl without many responsibilities, maybe as far as the Yajna is concerned. You have a very different role now. Where do you see the parallels, and where do you see how you're handling this?
Correct. I had no responsibility at all at that time. So I was watching what's going on. Really a sort of interested bystander, almost, in a sense. Yes, I was in the Yajna. Then when I actually came back to Madhuban in May, because January then we went back to the centres, then in May I come back for the Kumari's training, and then I'm getting a sense of how the Yajna has changed. But Baba had already told us there'll be retreats, there'll be bhattis. Baba used the word bhattis. So I was seeing change, but I was seeing things move on pretty smoothly. And today I'm seeing that not only Ramesh Pai's departure, but also the dadi's not actually hands-on in terms of the functioning of the Yajna anymore. And that change has happened since 2014. One dadi falls, the other dadi falls, and you know, it's a whole story. So we've been seeing the dadis here as an example of faith and love and truth, but not hands-on in the same way. Even when Daddy comes to London now, it's different than it used to be. So I, at this moment, don't feel that we've got a long time left, and it's not a doomsday story, but I really can't see. how the yajna is going to continue for much longer, because Baba's role is coming to an end. So Rameshpai is one thing, the age of the daddies is the second thing, but the third thing is very definitely Baba's role. And Baba gradually weaning us away, in a sense, helping us accept the change in the drama. And so no more meetings, then no more long detailed muralis. And now every time it's a question, is Baba going to come or not come? And so it's a very different situation, but I don't have too many questions about it, because I really deeply feel that God's task of establishment has to happen no matter what. And whatever role each one has played, they've played that role in such a powerful way that it's an inspiration to all of us. Just as Brahma Baba, 48 years later, it's still an inspiration. Didi, you met Didi, I'm sure. Mm. So Didi, I remember her very strongly from time to time, an inspiration. So everyone has played their role in whatever way they had to, and we are playing our role, but God's task has to achieve completion. And so I'm not getting into detail. People ask me, I'm seeing that Dadi Janaki has set the system of the world in place, empowering souls, uniting souls. I didn't know Dr. Nirmala so well, even though she was part of the first delegation and then actually living in London as the first teacher from October through to, I think, April. But I didn't know her intimately. She's a very private person. but now I'd say I know her pretty well. And it's because of the RC meetings that he has made sure that we are connected together. First the group of six sisters, and then the larger group, I think it fluctuates between 15 and 18. But that group is connected on a spiritual level, not only on a service level. That's been Daddy's job. What did she do all those years in an RC meeting? She held us together to bring us together as one. So I never ever think about, well, this isn't anything to do with me. You know, if something's happening in America and it's somehow connected with what I'm doing, I'll never have the thought, well, it's nothing to do with me. I'll just reach out and do what I need to do. So that connecting, that's been Daddy's task, and she did it beautifully. India, they've got their own structure, their own systems. So on that external level, things will carry on. It'll be okay. On the spiritual level, all of us have to take another jump up, because where in London we used to rely so much on Daddy, we realize that we have to move forward and have that connection with Baba, so that it's not just Daddy supporting me or sustaining me, but my sustenance has to come directly from Murali and Baba. And secondly, yes, whatever sustenance each one of us has taken, then our duty is to give that to others. So I'm not worried.
So, you know, we're all going to step up. You're going to have to step up, probably.
Well, I hope I'm doing that.
As in, even more. Does that, you never have any sort of apprehension about the responsibility that you already have, and how you have to deal with the family and the issues that no doubt come up?
There are things that happen that I'm not comfortable with.
Mm.
But I don't see it as just my responsibility in that sense. It would be too much. And so maybe I'm just being escapist, but I don't sense it as only my responsibility. I really see it as Baba's responsibility. And if anybody here takes it on and wants to be Baba's instrument, then they are equally responsible as anyone else. But I don't have sleepless nights worrying about the load and responsibilities. As I say, there are situations that are happening right now, this minute, that I'm uncomfortable about. But it's not disturbing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're not having sleepless nights. That's good.
I get very few hours anyway.
Does anyone have a question that you'd, or something you'd like to say to Jen Thiben before we finish?
I have one question. I've been in Madhuban this time around, and 18th of January, beautiful experience, all the in Pandabhavan, hardly a space to sit because the, you know, lots and lots of Brahmins are in deep tapasya and meditation, and then for Baba's meeting, and it was a really beautiful experience that for me it was not like waiting for Baba to come, but I was actually going to meet Baba and experiencing Baba. So then my mind was lost in what Baba was saying, but then afterwards I was asking, where is Baba's voice? Where is the, because we were, you know, I recollected, it was still Daddy's voice. So then I was thinking, well, maybe Daddy is in a different awareness, on a different stage, a very high stage. She's just, Baba's just using her voice. And then I did ask the legal department exactly what's going on. And they actually did say to me that Baba is actually using Daddy's voice, and Daddy's in a very high consciousness, that she's able to convey Baba's message. But I'm just sharing that experience, that I did enjoy the meeting of Baba, but it was completely a different experience. I'm not expecting or wanting or desiring from Baba, because even I myself, I am not wanting God, but I'm experiencing and enjoying what I feel is that what I should experience is more what it is like to be in Paramdham, which I can consider like the Paramdham stage. I'm sort of enjoying that awareness, completely full, completely without anything that is missing within me. So that took me through without feeling of anything missing. But I just wanted to raise that feeling of a difference. Sorry. I don't know if you can explain. I really don't know.
It's interesting. I've heard a few people who've come back after 18th January and shared their experience. And what I felt was that Baba Srishti was extremely powerful, and Baba was giving us that presence. You could feel Baba's presence through the drishti, and it seemed as if the drishti was much longer than usual, and I don't know whether that's true in terms of physical time, I wasn't checking, but it just felt as if it was long, 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 long drishti that Baba was giving. And then Baba speaks in essence, in a sense, now underlining a few messages. Think about how if a piano isn't quite in tune and the musician is trying to play it, so the chariot isn't quite okay, and yet Baba's still using it. And so the music that's coming out is not in the same way that it used to be when the chariot was okay, but it's still very recognizable that there's another musician who's using that instrument. And I think that that's what I understand, that I can't expect Baba to use that instrument to give us the sort of muralis that we're revising today. When you revise the muralis of the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, there's a big, big difference. So there is a difference, but it's been a difference that hasn't been dramatic. It's been slow. Baba's gradually, gradually, gradually taking us away from that expectation to the point where now we know that we take what we can from the drishti, and then further we take the essence of whatever is gyan. And Baba's underlining a few things for us. So it's not going to be new insights probably, but it's going to be an underlining of the most important aspects that we need to give attention to.
Just off the back of that, gentleman, do you think there's anything left that's new for Baba to tell us? I remember, you know, in previous Arvyet Muralis from the 80s and 90s, Baba would often sort of tease us to say, I will reveal this later on or whatever. Is there anything that you think that's left or not?
I think we don't have the precise details of how the change is going to happen. We've got the sort of broad brush strokes of, yes, there'll be natural disasters, there'll be lots of souls flying off, but we don't have the detail. And is it that we're just going to watch it happen and that's going to be the way we learn? Or is it that at some point Baba's going to give us signals? So if there's anything more that Baba needs to say, it would be about that, not about anything else. But maybe he doesn't need to tell us. Maybe we just need to be very stable here and see it all happen. And it'll happen in front of our eyes. Nine times now.
Then there won't be any single impure soul left. And he gave a figure also, 1 lakh, something like that. He mentioned the figure as well. So in a way, in Sakar Murli, Baba has really covered the ground. I'm thinking more on a future, like I'm more interested in golden age, like how things would be, you know. So lots of things about golden age, Baba has also kind of revealed. The systems would begin here, and he's touched on many things that we do here, how the systems would be there. I'm quite interested in that area.
It was a subject that Ramesh Pai was fascinated by and wrote many things about.
The last book of Ramesh Pai is all about that. I've got it in Hindi. And the copies ran out last time when they launched it, and they wanted Dadi to come for the launch in Bombay when she had left from London, but I don't think she had gone for that. But it was launched before September. But then when Baba came, they gave it to Baba. So that day, next day after Baba, all the books ran out. So I'd phoned Madhuban. So one of the brothers in wherever, whichever department, he gave his book to somebody to bring. So I got that one book. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a last question, and then we can finish.
Om Shanti. Yeah, when you talked about the two dadis who could not go to Baba, and Gurza Dadi was kind of left to go there, and Baba must have thought, instead of here doing the job, he comes straight down and addressed to the 700 souls, and he expected the 700 souls to go out and continue the service. Since then, do you think that has been an effective with Yagya, and do you think that progress continues, and what is the duty of existing Brahmins to prepare the world for the next phase, the last phase.
I keep losing you in between.
I'm just trying to connect the 68 and 69 area where Baba wanted the 700 souls who were there listening to Baba what they should do next to the existing Brahmin family, and trying to connect with the existing Brahmin family now, trying to connect with the world to prepare for their last phase of life.
I think that all the Muralis have actually been a very, very clear preparation for us, telling us what it is we need to do. So whether it's our spiritual stage, whether it's the quality of our interactions with each other, the way in which we have to serve the world, I think it's all happened. So we have a lot of information and we know it all in theory. We just have to do it. And I think that this is again the beauty of the whole subject of revising the Muralis, and especially now the Avyakta Muralis again, so that those who didn't hear them first time round can have that opportunity of understanding them now.
Okay.
I just one last thing. Okay. To share something related to what Vijay Bhai was pointing out, that how the instrument is being used in a different way. So I happened to listen to a class a few years back of Suraj Bhai, and he was mentioning about this thing, why the voice is not changing, why is it not a whisper? Because a lot of people had been asking this question to him and other seniors. So what he mentioned that, which sounded quite practical to me as well, that the instrument, Gulzar Dadi, the body as we know it's become so fragile, so that process of going into trance consumes a lot of energy through the physical brain, and that physical brain in that chariot is not strong enough now. So Bap Dada is using the instrument, but in a very detached way. And that's what I also feel very strongly, that Bap Dada is there, but he is using that instrument in a very detached way. So that process of going into trance and, you know, Bap Dada coming, that's not happening, because that causes wear and tear of that physical brain, but the presence is still there and in a much stronger way. So I just wanted to mention that fact.
I have to say I don't necessarily agree with all of that, but it's okay. If that's what makes you comfortable, it's fine, but I have to say that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jyantika, for sparing the time this evening. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You see, you can tell a professional he came without any notes. Thank you.